Blog Talk Radio.
We'd like to welcome you to Missing Pages of History, a show that's dedicated to give information to inform underserved communities. Yes, we want to fill in our missing pages. Today we're going to have a real interesting discussion. This discussion will be on part one, dealing with the Trayvon Martin death and the Zimmerman case, the verdict. We would like to have a open dialogue with the community on how they feel about the recent Zimmerman verdict and the death of the young youth, Kayvon Martin. To discuss this issue with us, this is our part one. We have with us our contributors and analysts, Mr. Emmanuel Joyner, out of North Carolina, and we have also out of the state of Pennsylvania, Mr. Michael McLean, and Ms. June Robson. We're going to discuss a little bit about our case, and then we'll open up to the public. As your host, Lee Robinson, the first thing I'd like to share with our audience, for those who are not familiar with this process, we're going to open up our phone lines in about 10 to 15 minutes. We'd like to get your views and comments, and when we open up our line, we'll call your last four numbers and ask you to state your first name and where you're calling from, and we'd like to have your feedback. First and foremost, right now, before we open up our phone lines, we'll go to our analysts. We have with us right now Michael and June McLean. We'd like to welcome everyone again and welcome y'all to Missing Pages of History, and we'd like to ask you at this point in time, Mr. McLean, we'd like to ask you, just in general, there are some fundamental issues or questions that we'd like to raise with our audience, and we'd like to have your first perspective on it. And the first question we'd like to know, just in general, what is your opinion on the not guilty verdict, Mr. McLean?
Yeah, this is Mikhail in Philly, and we had touched upon this last episode and watching the trial. It's pretty obvious that the result is all we're going to really get out of that particular situation. Because the laws of Florida are written in such a way, and the court system is set up in such a way, that the jury didn't really have too much of a chance to consider anything beyond the last few minutes of what George Zimmerman says took place that night in his confrontation with Trayvon Martin. So I really didn't expect too much from that, and I wouldn't expect any of that to change unless those laws were changed.
Okay. In terms of the verdict itself, there have been some discussions around whether or not people felt like it was based upon race. Based upon your observation, how do you see this question of race? How did race factor into the verdict, one way or the other? Mr. McHale.
From watching the trial, it seemed that race was a big factor in it. It just was never acknowledged. They had a jury of six individuals, all female, five white, and one, I guess they really kind of left her as indeterminate. It just seems that she was Hispanic and may have some African ancestry. But either way, the race issue was never really brought up front, neither by the prosecution or by the defense. And it was almost as if they had to just kind of leave that element out, even though it was the, as they've been saying lately, the elephant in the room.
Okay. Let's bring in a female. I'd like to get a female position on it. We'll bring in Ms. June Robinson. We'd like to bring her in. And we'd like to get a female version on. What is just your general overtake, June, on this recent verdict as it relates to the death of Mr. Martin, Trayvon Martin?
Well, my take is that, as I said before on the last time we spoke about this issue, for me, I think right off the bat that there was going to be a non-guilty verdict for Zimmerman after I heard the makeup of the jury. It was indeed a jury of his peers where they had the five women, basically the five white women, and then the one that's of unknown at this point, where they said she's black / Hispanic. But in terms of race, it was very, to me again, it was obvious that there was a lot. Race should have been obvious to everyone when they look at what took place on that night and the way that the trial was handled by the defense in terms of them putting out exactly what Zimmerman said, but not having the other individual, the victim, because he was no longer around to tell his story. It is interesting with the rallies that they're having today around the states, the 100 cities. I came across a news article that says Zimmerman now is declaring himself a Hispanic, and I think that's kind of interesting. After all of this time, he's never equated himself with the non-white population. All of a sudden, he's now one of a man of color. He's now considering himself a Hispanic.
So this race question continues. Is that what you're saying, Ms. Jill?
That's exactly what I'm saying. So he's going to try to use that card himself now. Now he's a man of color. That's interesting to me.
Okay, now we're going to bring in the other analyst, Mr. Joyner. We'd like to just to get an overview in general. What is your general take on this not get the verdict?
Well, my opinion is very is very high on not guilty because of what happened. What happened was that the defense was much, much better than the prosecution. The prosecution did not steal this case out like they're supposed to. Somehow they got pulled into a defense case. And this is a murder one case. It went to murder two because of the fight, per se. That was speculation about the fact that the dead man can't tell there was a fight. So it went to the fight thing, which again, when there's a fight involved, then of course it goes to murder two. Then goes to murder three or manslaughter after with a gun. With a gun after that because of the fight. And your ground law was never, should never have been in this case, and it was not in this case. But the juror 37 brought it to the case. That's what she actually found a not guilty verdict on because of the she brought in something that was not there. But again, when you have two lawyer-wise on the jury, that's a problem. When I was in law school, Dr. Ginsburg said never have a spouse as an attorney on the jury. They should never have been on the jury. That's number one. Because they're going to be for the defense regardless of what they say. They is a turnoff to everyone else. I believe the two jurors know each other, the two lawyer wives. I think their wife, their husbands probably know the defense. Been there 30 years, the defensive lawyer, so this case is done. Speedy trial, this was 16 months later. That's the problem. So all these problems I'm coming up with that no one seems to identify with, but not a speedy trial whatsoever. And again, the defense was just way much better than the prosecutor. They were not prepared. They had cutouts of drawings. They had displays where the defense had none. They only had the gun. They should have front-loaded this case from the beginning. It was murder one, not self-defense, not stand your ground, but both had right to stand their ground. So you got to move all that. That's equal. The equalizer was a 9mm gun. That was more than an equalizer for a teenage boy. That was an adult against a child. That was not a self-defense case. That was a racial profile all the way. But
let me stop you for a second, Mr. Joyner. And because I understand you have some legal background in terms of the area of law. Can you give our audience a better idea, your understanding of what constitutes the concept of self-defense?
Well, self-defense, to bring it down where you need to bring it to, it don't come self-defense when you have the equalizer. If there's just a fist fight and no one has a gun, well, that is self-defense, basically. When the gun comes into the picture, it's not self-defense anymore. Like the old cowboy movie. If both got a gun, meet in the middle of the street, and both of them draw, that's self-defense. He used to call it a duel, but that's self-defense. But both have equal, both have the same opportunity. Now, what weapons do you have? Can you bring a weapon or a knife or a gun? It's no longer self-defense anymore. That's very simply explained what self-defense is. Now, if self-defense is at your home and the person come across your steps on your property and they put, you know, if they invade your home and you shoot them, that's self-defense, that's an invasion of your property, that's your home, that's what you bought, that's what you got the gun for. Protect your home. Who's in your home? So that's out, when you get outside of the home, that's a different story. And when there is a presumption from 911 and saying, do not follow him. When Zimmerman was a former captain of the neighborhood watch, he knew the rules. Call the police, call 911, do not follow. No one challenged those rules. He didn't, of course, he didn't take the stand. But the defense should have been challenged on that defense, but no one challenged that. And it, again, the case was front-loaded, should have been front-loaded with just the profiling, the following, and the gun. They drug the defense, the prosecution, into a self-defense. And when weaponry, and this young man, and including the young man, lying again, he was 6'2", he was only 5'10", weighed 145 pounds. Zimmerman was larger than he was. They did not attack the anatomy of both men. And the age of both men, one was an adult, one was a child. 16-year-old child versus a 28-year-old grown man weighing over 200 pounds. That never got attacked. If I was doing the case, these are things I would attack from the beginning. And I would have got those 42 calls he got from the 9/11. They would have been, it would have been permissible. That's showing his state of mind. All he said was, I got one, and I can get away with it. And he did. He got away with it. With an all-Caucasian European jury, Hispanic is European too, when you look at it. So either way, that's what they got away with. Three people in that jury were totally, I think, knew each other. The lady that supervised 12,000 people, CEO, they're probably in the prominent neighborhood. All three, I think, knew each other. They had their minds made up when they got up in the court. They said they didn't understand the instructions. The instructions are very simple. All these juries in this country don't understand instructions. They both do all your wives. I have a little intelligence, but I thought the jury people were totally incompetent. Most of them were. And again, the jury was
Mr.
very,
Joyner.
Very... Yes.
Let me stop you for a second, but I'd like to have a quick response from you in terms of, based upon one of the jurors who have been interviewed concerning how they made that decision, how they came to that decision, she concluded that race was not a factor in that decision. Based upon what you have observed and what you have seen, do you think race was a factor in this decision?
Race was the biggest factor. Not only factor, the biggest factor. Based on Caucasian or European killing, shooting, murder a young black child. Race played a huge part because the defense brought race in. They brought in basically documents showing that the burglaries that occurred in this particular neighborhood or this particular area were all black males. That's bringing race into it. You're marching race into the picture now. They described this young man, another race factor. The witness, the young teenager, race factor. Yes, it was totally a race trial. There's nothing about that. That was about a white man, basically, a European, killing a black youth. And this is an extension of slavery. It's an extension of Jim Crow. It's an extension of discrimination. It's also... It reveals what really what goes on in the justice system, that our young men go through a revolving door, that fill up their stables of prisons. 44%
okay.
of us are in prison. And in Florida, race has to play a part because, again, black males get 20% or 7 years longer for the same crime that white males do or Europeans do.
Okay, I'm going to let my audience know that. In the next 2 minutes, we'll be available. We'll be taking phone calls. We'd like to hear your views and comment on the Zimmerman verdict, this whole issue dealing around the death of Trayvon Martin. You can feel free to call in at 818-337-0016. That's 818-337-0016. And when you call in, make sure you hit the number 1 so we can recognize your call. And when you come in, we're going to ask you if you just state your first name and where you're calling from, what state you're calling from. But before we go to that phone line, for Mr. Joyner, and also I would like to address this to Mr. McHale. Many people feel like that the prosecutor did not do all that he could do to defend the integrity in the life of Trayvon. They feel like it seemed like he was maybe being in cahoots with the defense attorney. One of the things I learned through this process that I was told by law students that when you're putting a jury together, as Mr. Joyner stated earlier, you should never allow any jurist whose husband or wife is a lawyer to be a jurist. Now, many people believe that this was a fix. The fix will end from the beginning. I would just like to hear your perspective on this question. Do you think this thing will all stay from the beginning? Mr. Joyner, you go first, and then we'll come to Brother McHale. Then we'll open up our phone lines for comments and questions. Mr. Joyner,
well,
I'd like to hear your response.
That's something the FBI should look at this, of course, when they do the civil rights that's going to come. I hope that comes up. I'm going to make sure that comes up. The jurors, when I got the resume on the jurors, I was very, very, like, how do we select the jury? Maybe it could have been pre-selected. Out of 500 people, how did you get 2 lawyers' wives on the jury? And get a prominent, another European lady that was a CEO of a corporation that has been defunct. I make sure the 1,200 people had a nurse on there. I think they had a Hispanic lady, or you might say another Caucasian, you know who she was. She had 8 children. I think that was the holdout on the jury when things went into the room. She wanted to leave because they pressured her. Who pressured did the pressuring? I think the 3 ladies did the pressuring. I'm quite sure the 2 lawyer wives did the pressuring. Later, the CEO of the corporation, I think she did some pressuring. I think one was a nurse and some was something else, you know. So it was. They went into the jury room already divided 3-3. Well, that's who those 3 were. Then it went down to 5-1 after pressure put on the rest of them. So here we go. That's what happened. The jury, I believe the jury was pre-selected. It's just not possible to get 2 lawyers' wives on the jury because they never serve or they want them on there. They automatically disqualified us because you got that is basically patronizing the defense. And that's what usually what happens. Most of their lawyers are defensive lawyers. So why are you going to pick up? You're going to patronize the prosecution? Make any sense to me? It's, you know, special in the lawyer field. I believe that the jury was pre-selected because they were, all, you know, they were the ones going to do certain things. I don't think the lawyers were the prosecution and the attorney. I don't think that was, you know, possible there. They just didn't do the case very well because again, they got drugged into a battle of self-defense. They should never let themselves go there. This is a case of racial profiling, which, again, the Supreme Court said, no, you can't do that. Even though the states can't do that, but that happened. This guy was a vigilante. He was a thug. That's what he was. I want to be a cop. So we need to get all this out there from that particular point. Where did he get the gun? How did he get the gun? Did he have a mitt for the gun? Need the safety was off the gun, everything. This guy much bigger than Trayon and everything else. So I think the jury looked at being a, you know, white person against a black person, African American against a European, and they had a chance to do something. So we don't have to make this a not guilty. because of self-defense. Self-defense okay. can happen in an open field like this, an open apartment complex. His body is 25 feet from the sidewalk. They should have came back again and front-loaded the case of what they had, which was a 911 tape. Zimmer's gun. That's all they had. Everything else was speculation. Everything else was assuming assumption. So
okay,
when your question about it was being fixed, I think the jury was pre-selected. You don't get these people on a jury like this. Three of them, I thought. And no, I know two for sure. Three is a possibility. Being a CEO of a corporation, now defunct, and she became staff. So, of course, they came in with their sides.
Okay, Mr. McHale, what's your take? Do you think this case was fixed? And we'll go into our phone lines after we get your response. What's your position?
My personal opinion and concerning the Sanford police, they already have a bad reputation. And when you deal with smaller towns, the possibilities for collusion are phenomenal. So it wouldn't surprise me at all. Currently, we recently had the president speak concerning the case, and that was kind of nice, I guess. But there also is a move to push towards a civil case against George Zimmerman. Personally, I'd rather see that case being directed towards the Sanford Police Department, their jurisprudence system, the lawyers involved, and a good hard look at where money is coming from. Seems to be possible that Mr. Zimmerman's defense fund was being supported by racist groups, possibly the Klan, and also seems as if the entire proceeding is being used now as simply an opportunity to be a discussion piece. And there's a lot more important things to do than just simply discuss these kind of topics. If you're going to do anything, it needs to be done in a manner that's going to be effective. And if we can get to the bottom of this, in terms of this particular case, fine. But we're representing the same principles that when a child is missing and it's a black child, they're forgotten. When a police kill an African-American, male or female, it's forgiven. So this is a general problem. It's a problem that's been endemic with this country since the beginning, and talking is not going to be enough to finish this thing or put it in order.
Okay, we can start right there. We can go to the phone line. We have some callers been waiting real patiently to get on the phone. We'd like to thank our callers for waiting. We're going to caller number 8500. Caller number 8500. Welcome to Missing Pages of History. Caller 8500. Your question or comment, caller?
I think that this has really and truly been a reflection of the ongoing experiences of young black men in America. My name is Katie. I'm calling from Colorado. I'm experiencing this firsthand at this moment as we speak. I, too, have a son, and I'm right now struggling and fighting for his freedom in the judicial system. I totally understand the possibility that the jury could have been pre-selected. This is what they do. They will use their family members, friends, colleagues, anyone to carry out their agenda. And if they're stacking the deck against this young man, and he's not aware of that, and his family's not aware of that, then they have to show you what they're capable of doing. And the verdict that you got, not guilty, is a reflection of what the two gentlemen has just shared with us, the possibility that they had no intention of listening to the facts. They had no intention of listening to the evidence. In America, young black men are often guilty because of their color and because of their race. They're suspicious, and they must prove themselves to be innocent, and that's unfortunate.
Okay, caller, we'd like to thank you, and we hope things will turn out positive for you with your son, and we would like to have you to continue to support Missing Pages of History. We thank you. We can go to our next caller. We have with us caller number 9289. We have with us caller 9289. your question or comment, please. Yes, caller, 9389.
Okay. Yes. The only thing I could see is from the beginning of it, I was actually watching the trial, and even from the beginning, just the way the defense and the prosecution interacted with each other. I know at times you have to interact, but I just feel like the prosecution supplied a lot of information or documents, et cetera, to the defense, which I couldn't understand. Why would you allow yourself to have to supply the defense? So I felt from day one that it was all in the fix, and it was just something just to please people, give it a perception that we have justice here. And thank you.
Okay, we thank you also, caller. Okay, we're going to go back to Ms. Space History Analyst. We're going to Ms. June Robinson. She's a mother, and I'm just real curious in terms of as a mother. June, what would you say to your kids if they found themselves in a situation similar to Trayvon, given the fact that you have seen what have taken place in this case? How would you deal with that? What do you say to your children?
It's kind of hard because, as been pointed out, the system has already proven itself to be a corrupt one, has always been against our African American men, and it is really hard to sit down and find the exact words to tell a child. You're supposed to be able, the police is supposed to be there to protect you. Even in this instance, Trayvon couldn't have called the policeman because a lot of times when our youth call the police, they don't respond. And even if they do respond, it's in a very negative manner. It usually turns out against you. So it would be very hard to sit down now and find the correct or the right words to tell a child. But the one thing I would probably start instituting or making the child aware of right away, even at a very young age, if you can begin to study, if you're going to live here in America, start studying the laws of this land. Know those laws. It may, in turn, come against you at some point, but you will have a lot more ammunition by knowing exactly what those laws are and who and what they represent. I think that would be what I would tell a child to do. Start early. Make it simple. You know, if you know the case, police are not for you, but that's what we have in place. Just use it. You know, learn as much as you possibly can to act as a defense for you if you should find yourself in a position such as Trayvon was in.
Okay, we'd like to alert our listeners that we're going to go over a little bit today, and for those who would like to hear the completion of this whole program, you can always go to our archive by going on or logging into www.blogtalkradio.com/, and you type in Missing Pages of History, Inc. And we also like to say to our listeners and our supporters that Missing Pages of History has extending its annual quarterly raffle drawing to take place on July the 27th. It has been extended an additional week, and it will take place July 27th. You can hear the winners on WCLM 1450 AM out of Richmond, Virginia. We'd like to thank all those who have supported us, and the drawing will take place next week, which will be July 27th on WCLM 1450 AM. Now, in terms of, we're going to sort of start closing down the program, and what I would like to have some feedback from my analyst, Mr. Jordan, can you give us a sense of how has your community responded to this verdict? What's going on in your community? What are the people doing and thinking?
Well, of course, we have the protests in the city, of course, with our national action network, Shelton. I have no idea how many protests here. I'm in Raleigh. I left from Greenville. My wife's aunt is 100 years old today, so we're going to celebrate her birthday. So that's why I'm on the road going to Greenville, North Carolina. 100 years old is quite different. To recapitulate said about the trial we're going to have. We have to not distance ourselves from what happens, because it happens in daily life. The laws are written by Europeans, basically. So the laws that you're going to get is going to get from there. Now, the African-American lawyers, we usually get a European lawyer and get in trouble because they listen to them. But, you know, we know the system is racist. So we support our black lawyers, but we know what they go with, what they go through. I've been in the courtroom many a day and see what they go through. And most of the time, our young teenagers, we have to basically, we do things that are not right when you're not guilty. They want to make us guilty regardless. So there's always some compromise. There's always something that we have to give in to them and get a little time. You got to serve a little time because they got to keep these enterprise and, you know, jails full. It's 44% African-American with 13% of the population. That is crazy numbers. That's showing that the system, sentencing system is unjust. But again, they have to keep them fit. They're still an extension of slavery. This is what they do to you. The police is the extension of police brutality. Slavery again. Everything that happens to us is an extension of slavery. Every tentacle. We have to understand that. All that we're going to do is hit them in the pocketbooks. Don't support what they do. We've got to find a way to break them from certain places. We just want to go and just don't go there. We try to do with them. Stop filling our tanks up, fill our tanks up half full, just enough to go to work. Stop giving them all our money. They only want you for a benefit. Whereas sports, regardless of what it is only for a benefit. Again, they pay the white quarterbacks all the money, and we got to pay for $2 or $3 million. They pay for $20 million. Doesn't make it. And the poorest player on the team is a quarterback most of the time. Can't do nothing else. They're not the team. 85% of African Americans play the game. 85% of whites on the bench and getting paid more money on the bench. Only have to play when he gets his uniform dirty. Can't you see what's going on? Trayvon Martin again. It was where he was dressed. It's where he was. His pigmentation. This is what we're all about. This is how they judge us. By our pigmentation, by the way we dress, the way we talk sometimes, the slang, whatever. It's all part of our diluted culture. We're the ones that got to fill up the hospitals. Just go check the hospitals there. We're the ones that got to fill up the hospitals because they make a lot of money. And we're the ones, they try the medication on. We're the guinea pigs. They never stop. And we're the ones that are in jail or in prison for long terms. I had a young man that went to jail for sitting on television. They gave him 25 years. Look at the young lady down in Florida shooting a gun off, protecting herself, everything, at 20 years. Didn't hit nobody, but the ceiling. You can see how unjust these laws are against African Americans and how well they're suited for European Americans. Because they make the laws. They're the judges, they're the lawyers, they make everything. And we just subject it to the ordeals. So I'm going to sum it up and say this. Like June was saying, you know, learn the law through this. That don't do any good, basically. Because it's still the same thing going to happen. They got 26 think tanks that study black America. We don't have a one that study white America. We need 26 think tanks, too. To study this. We got to study the 15-16. They said we were 1/16 or what? I have no idea what it is yet. We need to study them and put it out there in the media. Who owns the media runs the world. Runs your thinking, your listening, your hearing, your seeing. It runs your five cents. Whoever owns the media. I'm closing with that note.
Okay, and we'd like to go to our analyst, Mikhail June. What's going on in y'all community? How the people dealing with it? And give us some final thoughts.
There's a protest.
Protest is happening today at noon down at 6 and Chestnut, and it's at the federal building as it is happening at all the federal buildings across the country.
Right, so that's what's going on here in Philadelphia. And as to the entire situation that we're in, Mr. Joy is very right. We do need some think tanks, and we need to think about how we can go forward and to be strong enough to keep these folks off our backs. A lot of the problems that we have are not going to be solved in anywhere but or by anyone other than us. And we need to put that time and effort and that research in. We have black colleges. We have a lot of educated black people. We have people from the community who are active. We need to come together and build our own institutions to whatever extent that's possible.
Okay, on that note, we'd like to thank our analysts, Mikhail, June, Robinson, and Mr. Joyner for sharing their views and perspectives. And we all, as always, we'd like to thank our participants and our listeners for listening to Missing Pages History. As we stated earlier, this is Part 1. We will have Part 2 on August the 2nd, same time, same place. We'd like to encourage you to come in and have a discussion on what concrete actions, solutions, how can we learn from this particular experience, and how can we come up with some ideas, programs, some projects to make sure that this will never happen again. We're going to have that discussion as part of our Part 2, and it will take place August the 2nd. And there is one particular note I would like to say to my listeners today. The young lady was on earlier, Ms. Katie Fulton, she said her son was in a similar situation that Trayvon had to go to experience. But all the difference is he is still living right now. We would like to hope that if people have interest in finding out more about her case, I would encourage you that you can contact her at saveoursons2013@gmail. saveoursons2013@gmail. Until next time, we'd like to thank everybody for listening to Missing Pages of History. We'd like to thank all our supporters and remind them again, our quarterly raffle will be next week, July 27th at WCLM, 1450 AM, Richmond, Virginia. Until next time, let's try to always fill in those missing pages of history so our youth will have something to study and to live by. Until next time, let's strive to go forward ever and backwards never. We thank you for watching Missing Pages of History.